All right, so hope everybody's doing well. And yeah, welcome to another podcast. I think today's probably a good day to do a podcast, mainly because I'm in a good mood. Not that I actually was in a pretty shit mood for like 4 or 5 days. And not that I'd ever shy away from podcasting when I'm in a bad mood, but yeah, isn't it great that I'm in like a, we'll call it like, I'll actually go as far as say a good mood. I was going to say a better mood, then I was like, nah, don't like dampen your spirits. This is a good day. So today is Sunday. I think we're 9 weeks away from Berlin Marathon, which being a Sunday, you're probably going to guess where this is going. 9 weeks away from a marathon. Sunday, what day is Sunday? What do people do on a Sunday? You guessed it. Today was long run day. I actually haven't been doing, you know, too many long runs. I guess the way the training had been going, it was very probably like controlled, a lot of controlled intensity. If I was going to do 16K run, 18K run, you know, they were, or even 20K, I think is probably one of the longest runs I've sort of done since January. The purpose was that if I was going to run, then I'd run quicker, I suppose you could say. And so if I was doing anything from 16 to 20K, they would have been done pretty fast, probably like 3:40 per K, so around 6 minute mile pace. Aside from that, everything else was mainly just recovery. I think I did a slightly longer run last week on Sunday, but I can't remember how far. I think it might have been 14 mile, possibly 15, but no pace whatsoever because I was still recovering from the 5K, and so I just needed my calf was sore. I had all sorts of problems, which I guess in a way was to be expected. It's part of the reason why, you know, I think I said on YouTube when I spoke about the 5K that if I was coaching somebody and they wanted to do it and they hadn't wore spikes in 4 years, I'd probably tell them, find a new coach. No, it wouldn't have been that deep, but it would have been like, come on, like, is this a good move when things are going really well? Why would you, you know, throw that kind of a risk in the program? But knowing me and knowing that I really needed to work on that, you know, I've called it that relationship with racing. I think it was super important. But the body was beat up. You know, I had to get physio twice last week. That my calf was in a bad place. Actually, 3 times last week. So my calf was in a bad place. My foot, where you sort of flex the foot and where you tie your laces, you know, I had tenderness there. One morning was kind of struggling to walk. It wasn't smooth. It wasn't free. That's what I like to say. Like, nothing in life is kind of free, and you don't get to jump on the track, race a 5K in spikes, you know, race on the track hard, fast, all these kind of things, you know, your first time in years, and think you're just going to wake up the next day and the day after that and no pain, no nothing. So got through that. Then I'm going to say altitude's like amazing, but it's also like such a pain in the ass. There's these like, I don't know how you would call it, like just like kind of like almost like just like shitty periods post altitude where like you just don't feel good. And so I wasn't sure last week if it, the other thing I don't like about it is there's this like layer of uncertainty, because, you know, as runners, like, let's be honest, you're probably a bit, I don't know, do we call it like living on a knife edge between like you're confident about your fitness, then you're kind of like not confident about your fitness, you're a little bit unsure of yourself, etc., etc., right? There's kind of a lot going on. And so when you add in something else to the equation, it's like, well, I'll give you context. I trained so bad last Tuesday. And I want to make this clear that this is relative to me. And I'm not suggesting that these times, that there's anything wrong with them. But I was running, I think, 650 for 2K, and my lactate was higher than when I was up at 6,000 feet in St. Moritz running 620. So somehow I had lost over 15 seconds per K. The work, the effort was harder, and I'm now supposedly at sea level, right? So maybe it was the race, that's what you sort of put it down to. Maybe I'm just tired post-race, et cetera, et cetera. Then 3 days later, and now I'm delighted I did the race. Had I not done the race, the 5K, bearing in mind all I've done for the last, what do we want to call it, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, till everybody in Belfast that kind of supports me, as in like my like just call it like support team, support network, physiologist, you know, the sports director, Athletics Northern Ireland, this kind of thing. I'm flying. Things are going really good, blah, blah, blah. Everything's great. I then go in the lab for the first time in ages on Friday, and I just put that YouTube video up. Probably one of my worst tests ever. Honestly, probably one of my worst tests ever. Brilliant in terms of my VO2 max being higher, but probably everything else, every other aspect of the test, like not good. Like running economy lost a huge chunk of what normally I like, that's my like sweet thing. That's normally like my big asset. Nope, not good. Then like all these like lower sort of like lactate numbers that you really want at like the early paces. Nope, nope, none of those. And it was just a bit like, shit, like what's going on? Like between Tuesday and Friday, it's kind of like, God, I've gone backwards. Now, when you haven't raced, that can be a really tough sort of like period to deal with, I suppose, is what you could say. Because if you haven't done any sort of like races, that's going to give you like, don't worry, you know, it must just be like, I don't know, you must just be tired, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, fair enough, when you've ran a race and it went well, then you can kind of say to yourself, look, it's impossible that this is fitness, because I couldn't have raced the way I did if this was, you know, fitness, right? And so I think that's why sometimes racing is really important, because it gets over that, like, that maybe it's insecurity, you know, maybe it's doubting yourself a little bit, but at least it kind of puts a hold on that, and you don't completely think you've just like lost it, right? But I honestly had felt like I had completely lost it. Like, it was just a tough week. That was kind of a really tough week when I look back. Like, I just struggled. I don't really know why. Back to the altitude story, there's just these days post-altitude where I don't even really know the science. I just know that when you come back from altitude, there's just things going on. There's changes in the body. There's changes in the physiology. They say race in the first probably 3 to 5 days or something like that. They actually say to race in the first like 24 hours to 72 hours, but I think different people have felt. Jake Whiteman won a world championship gold medal, I think on day 5 or 6. Jakob Ingebrigtsen told me on day 5 he feels really good. I raced that 5k PB, that was day 6. I don't know what's good, bad or indifferent, but they do say race in the first 3 days. And then they say wait for 14 days or even 21. Different people have different days that they think to themselves, that's a day, that's the day I feel really good. I'm probably now going to say that it's becoming fairly clear that day, what would that be, like day 10 to 14 for me, not fantastic. I left altitude on the Saturday, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is 3 plus 7. Yeah, day 10 was the an awful day in Bushy Park. I mean, I felt so like legless and just lifeless. I couldn't run fast at all. And because I, you know, I track different things like lactate and now this like O2 saturation. If you're going to wear this stuff or pay attention to this stuff, you just have to slow it down. You just have to, it sucks, but you just gotta, yeah, you're there to work at an intensity. And if that day you have to run a lot slower to hit that intensity, well, that's what you got to do. Friday testing, like I said, you know, not good. I wasn't in a bad mood. I blamed the 5K. I didn't really think of altitude, to be honest, like that sort of like rough period. And I just blamed the 5K. Like, I'm tired. I wish I didn't do it. That was stupid. All this kind of sort of like crap. I didn't wish I didn't do it because it was really good for me. But I was just like, this is why logically I didn't think it was a good idea. Because if I now struggle for a week or two, what we do as humans, which I think is really important to take note of, is we often dig holes for ourselves. And then in a week or two's time, when we've dug ourselves out of that hole, maybe it's overtraining, maybe we did something stupid, maybe we played five-a-side football, maybe we did this big cycle that we weren't supposed to do, maybe we did a race when we weren't supposed to do it. And then training kind of goes shitty for a week or two. And then when it kind of gets better, or let's say you get injured even worse from playing your football or skiing, or I don't know what you did, we have this like thing where we celebrate that we're back to where we were. And I think that is fucking bullshit. We should never be celebrating that we got back to where we were before the mistake, before that like event that we were like, you shouldn't have done that. Because that is not a celebration. That's a loss of 7 days, 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, month. And we should never be like, of course, it's a good thing that, you know, hypothetically, you're hopefully not injured anymore. You know, maybe more than that, maybe the fitness is turning in a better direction. Maybe you're a bit fresher. I'm happy for you. But I'll not celebrate that I made a mistake and it cost me 2 weeks. And now that I'm back to where I was 2 weeks ago, I've still lost 2 weeks. And so that's kind of been the, call it agenda for this entire period of training, is none of that. And not to accept that, not to think that it's okay that I make mistakes when I've been doing this for over 20 years and I have every bloody bit of technology you could possibly think of that's supposed to protect you from making those errors and those poor judgment calls. And so that is that. I think it was altitude. I don't think I'm going to put it down to mistake or shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that. The risk possibly was a risk, but I gained a lot from it psychologically. And maybe you get a little bit of a fitness boost. It did get my VO2. My VO2 in 1 second. I think my VO2, I can just click here. I think this is it here. So I did a VO2 max test on the 28th of March. My VO2 max that day was 70.8, 71, I guess. So April, May, June, July, 4 months later, it's now 75. You know, that's a, I'm going to have a drink of my smoothie. Hold on. So that's a remarkable, is what I'll say, shift. But it's still not what today's podcast is about. Remarkable shift. I guess on YouTube, I talk a little bit about it, but that was just basic VO2 training. And if you get VO2 training right, it's actually not that hard. I think people think of VO2 as this, like, I've got to really push. That's kind of like anaerobic power. VO2, if you're doing it right, you'll do like 400 or 600 on the track, maybe 800 or on a road, it doesn't matter. Or in a grass field, again, it doesn't matter. When you come to the end of the 2 minutes, let's say, and then you're going to take like a minute rest or 75 seconds, you should be pretty tired and you should be breathing, but you should be thinking to yourself, yeah, I could do another at least probably minute or two, if not a bit more. So VO2 is that area around like your 8 minute effort. And so I don't expect on a training day, especially when you get the rep 3 or 4, that you could keep it going for 8 minutes. But if you really had to, you should be able to keep it going for 3 to 4. And if you can't, it means you're probably working at anaerobic power, which probably won't improve your VO2. It might improve your next race because anaerobic power can help that, but it's probably not going to move your VO2 forward. And so I think what was really fun to see was by doing probably, I think before the previous test, I had only done 1 or 2 VO2 max days that you could call it, or VO2 capacity days, which is that the effort level around your, I don't know, your 8 to 10 minute sort of mark, you could call it, between 3K and 5K for me. And so they weren't super hard sessions, but I'd only done 1 or 2 before the 71 result. And so it was great to see, after a couple of months of training, paying attention to the numbers. If you remember, I complained about someone's comment on YouTube that was kind of like, when are you going to actually start training? You know, you'll not run 208 training like this. But actually, if that kind of training every 3 months improved, if my VO2 max went up to 78, for example, before Berlin, and the other stuff kept getting better, which when we talk about today's long run, we'll see. Well, then you'd get pretty close, because actually all training is supposed to be doing is getting your physiology to a place that your next race goal is better achievable. And so the capacity work is improving that physiology. And then I just briefly mentioned anaerobic power. There's also aerobic power. And those sessions are what's going to get you ready to meet the physical demands almost of race day. So you can look after the physiology and you can keep it moving forward. That's really important. But then sometimes you've got to break it down almost a bit more simply and be like, let's say like Antrim half marathon, you know, it's 13 miles. And you say to yourself, all right, well, let's think about this logically. The longest repetition I've done at race pace is, I mean, I don't know, maybe 1500 meters. And so you say to yourself, all right, well, I think it'd be helpful if I did 4 times 2 mile. I think that would help. And if you think about it, that would help. And then you say to yourself, all right, and then maybe like 10 days later, I could do something like 3 times 3 mile. That would really help. And what that's doing is taking the physiology that you already have, you've already built, you've already worked on, and it's giving you the physical attributes to allow you to handle that intensity for 13 miles. So my thought process is, if you've done 4 times 2 mile, maybe you've done 3 times 3 mile, and then maybe you'll do, you know, you could do like 4 mile, 3 mile, 2 mile, for example, right? And that seems to make sense, that you've done longer reps, which is closer to race day, which is 13 mile in one go. And you've also extended how much time in the most recent 4 weeks that you've actually ran at race effort. And I say effort, not pace, effort. And I think that's critical. That's obviously what I didn't do for the 5K. That, you know, the longest reps I did was 600 meters. So, you know, that just isn't going to get the job done. That's like less than, well, just over 10%. So like I said, that's similar to having only done 2K reps and expect your body on the day of the half marathon to just be like, no problem. Like, let's do it. Ideally, you want to be doing like maybe a like couple of 3 mile reps. I actually, before Antrim last time, I did an 8 mile like hard tempo, and that really probably got me ready to run really well. So, but I'm weighing up, is it worth it? Because Antrim's not the big goal. So even though that 8 mile did really good job last time of getting me ready to run really well at Antrim, what then happened after Antrim is I was a bit tired and I had lost some of that capacity. So all the hard stuff I did that really helped Antrim, yes, they really helped Antrim, but it took away from probably London, which was 3 weeks after. So you're always weighing up these like more specific sessions that you're going to do. Understand that they will take away from the capacity stuff that you've worked probably really hard for much, much longer. And so don't do too much of that. Like, don't do too much of those specific hard sessions, or you take away from the capacity stuff. So I'm going to now get on to today's long run. So first proper long run of the buildup, but I kind of knew it would go well, because when you've done a lot of the good training that I have done, this very like calculated and intensity control, and you've got the physiology in a good place, and we knew leaving St. Moritz, if today didn't go well, it would have been like tiredness or this stupid altitude thing. It wasn't fitness. I wasn't concerned about that. But I got out there, I was doing the first sort of like 4 to 6K. It was really just about getting warmed up a little bit and not like diving straight into like hard, you could say. And so because I've been wearing this like Moxie oxygen saturation thing, which is so good, I have to say, I'll talk more about it. I'll do a full episode basically on it, because it deserves it. It really does. But what it does a great job of is sort of telling you or identifying when you're kind of warmed up. And so some days 2K, some days 3K, some days 4K, I see that the kind of like saturation is coming up to a good place. But today, for whatever reason, I decided to do 6K because it just wasn't coming up as quickly as it would. So obviously when you first start exercise, you're not warmed up, so your saturation kind of goes down. But then as you kind of like get warmed up, it starts to settle down. I have to tell you this is really funny. Me and Ricky were talking about, Ricky's the physiologist that helps me in Belfast, and we weren't joking. I was being dead serious about like feeling crap after altitude. And he just texted me and said, "What day post altitude did I batter you at table tennis?" And that's so funny, because I kept complaining at the Olympics like 2 years ago or whatever, that every time I had a shit session, I blamed like altitude. And so Ricky said, "Is that why you've been shit at table tennis?" And that's kind of the joke. So it's just funny that text came in. But yeah, like this Moxie, it does a great job of like when you run in the evening. I would say running at nighttime the saturation seems to come up quicker. And that's probably because you've already ran in the day and you've already walked around quite a bit and you've been quite active. But when you go out there first thing in the morning and you set off, the saturation naturally just declines. And it actually declines almost down to like what a thresholdy type effort would be, which is crazy and quite frightening. And then as you take it easy and you allow it its time, and then it comes up to obviously easy effort. And the numbers are like, it might go down to like 33-34%, which is getting down close enough to like some sort of like thresholdy intensity, given that it's a range. And then as it kind of backs off, then it comes up to like 40%, 45, 50, etc. So there's no point wearing technology if you're not going to pay attention to it. And so I've read a lot of research papers on it, and I've watched a lot of like seminars, like the guys that worked in the Nike Breaking 2, for example. And so it just made sense this morning. Like normally on a Sunday when I'm like going to do a fast long run, let's call it, I normally charge off because I care about, it's bullshit, but I care about the overall average pace for like Strava. And so normally I'd be more inclined to almost run the first 4 or 5K, not fast, but like certainly not slow, because I'd be like, I'm not going to jog for 4 or 5K and then that's going to hurt my overall average when I could just kind of get going. But today wearing the Moxie, it was like, no, you're gonna run easy until the saturation comes up. Because what I've sort of found is if you let it come up and then you start going into your like harder effort, you tend to be able to keep the saturation higher for like longer, you could say. Whereas if you charge off and you don't allow it that period of, you know, dipping down a bit at first because you haven't done any warm up, so of course that's going to happen. But if you don't allow it to naturally come back up by running nice and easy, if it doesn't come back up, it tends to just like drastically go down hard. And so that's just kind of been a learning curve, I guess, for me. So first 6K was easy. Then it was just the structured long run. So it was 10K at like 325 pace. 5K at 3:15, around that, and then 5K at like 3:05. And I did like, I think 2K easy at the end again to just let that saturation kind of come back up. I think if we want to talk about saturation, I think over the next couple of weeks, you'll notice the saturation will, even though today it was very stable and very good, I think you'll notice that the numbers will come up slightly higher, which is a great thing to be able to run at the same speed, but be more saturated. That means you're not working as hard. I also think what you might find is in that, like, call it like 2K at the end, like nice and easy, that again, the saturation in that 2K will come up because hypothetically you haven't worked as hard in the like session. And so lots of really interesting stuff. That was very good. Like I said, I was running today at like 3:05 pace to 3:10, maybe like 3:06, things like this. And it was the same effort from probably like heart rate and you know, like even the Moxie, the O2 saturation, it's the same effort as like 3:20 to 3:25 last week, which is just crazy. It made me want to podcast because it was like, try not to let one day then dictate where your head's at with running. And it's like, have that short memory that when, you know, you have a bad day, well, you have to just forget about it. You can forget about it from a don't beat yourself up about it. But if you have to make changes because the next day goes bad or the day after that, well, then don't forget about it from a I need to do something to fix this perspective. Like, you, if you have to fix it, fix it. But have that short memory that you don't think suddenly, you know, everything's over and all the rest of it. Yeah, I'm grateful that today went good because that, I hate using this like term, like I deserve it or I earned it, but I really have. Like, it's been a very sensible, long, you know, three altitude camps, I think, this year. A lot of really disciplined training, a lot of good training, and yeah, it should have been good. It should have went well. It should have been that I'm going to these next couple of sessions over these next weeks, and I just should have that rhythm back that I had up in St. Moritz. And when you build that rhythm and that flow and things are in a good place, as long as you don't really do anything like stupid and overtrain or overpush or don't let the body recover, you should be going to sessions thinking like, today I'll go good because I've took my X amount of easy days, whatever it takes, depending on what you did. Maybe it's one easy day, maybe it's two, depends how hard you worked. I've took me easy days. I recovered well. I ate well, slept well, did all these things. There's no reason this next one shouldn't be good because I haven't done anything. The fitness can't change in 3 days, et cetera, et cetera. And you've likely not been to altitude and you can't have this excuse about days post altitude. But yeah, it was nice. I felt good. It was really promising. Maybe like I would have liked to have seen the heart rate a little bit lower, but I'm kind of just learning that heart rate is kind of a bit, it's going to sound interesting, but it's just kind of a little bit like not irrelevant. I'm not going to go that far, but like, I think Moxie is going to become a lot, the O2 saturation is going to become a lot more accurate than heart rate because heart rate's kind of shifting quite a lot because of like temperature. And so if you're kind of getting hot and warm, but the trouble is like to make a prediction that your heart rate's gone up because of temperature, it can then be difficult to assume or not assume, well, then has the effort level gone up? So how we could track effort, like think of it, things like lactate and things like this, but you can't stop every like 10 minutes to check lactate. Normally I'd have done a run like today and I'd have stopped after the warm up 6K, after the 10K bit, after the 5K bit, after the 5K bit. So I had to stop 4 times maybe. And so people love this on Strava, but had you looked at the like elapsed time, like you've just stopped. You've stopped for drinks, you've stopped for lactate, you know, and before you know it, you've added 3 minutes to a run. And the fact of the matter is the run then didn't take you 91 minutes. It took you 94. And that's recovery. You know, what do you think your saturation does when you're stood around for a minute, you know, checking lactate? It goes up. And so I think this saturation thing is going to be really useful, because really what you're looking for is I didn't care what heart rate was, because I could see the saturation was just steady. It wasn't going down, right? So each time I got a little bit quicker, it dropped like that little bit to match the new pace, right? So maybe it was like 40 for the first, like, you know, 6K, and then maybe like 35 for like the 10K where I'm at like 325 pace. And then when I go to, you know, three like 15 pace, I think it was like 30, 31. And then when I go to 305, then it's like 27, 28. But what you're looking for is that it just doesn't continue to drop. Because when you work at an intensity that is above like this, what we call critical speed, which is maximum lactate steady state, which is like your anaerobic threshold, LT2. Once you go above LT2 and you're into like probably like hard, like maybe like the kind of effort that you could hold for like 30 minutes, 20 minutes. So once you're into like hard, well, what the pattern with the saturation thing is that it just continues to go down, right? And so if I was at 30, 31, and now I was able to run 315 per K at that, then when you went to 305, you might have seen like 28 for the first K, 27 for the next K, 25 for the next K, 23 for the K after that. Well, that shows that it's not steady, right? And so it's not, chances are that in another 2 or 3K time, like 2 or 3K's time, sorry, well, you're probably going to have to slow down, or you're going to come to a halt, because you can't keep that effort going if the saturation is just dropping and dropping and dropping. So it's really useful, because it can predict lactate as well. It's not a lactometer, but if you've done a test and you have lactate numbers, and so you know that at 30% your lactate's 1.5, or it's very reliable, like when you moving forward, it's very predictable is what you could say. Like, and I think more so than heart rate, because on a day like today, there is quite a big heart rate shift. But like when I run a marathon, in the last probably 8 mile, I'm well over 170, you know, like 170, 171, and then right up to 174, 175. I think even on a hot day, I can go up to 176, 177. And that doesn't mean that I can come back and in train and be like, nice, I can push up to 171, 172. Because like in London, when it was cold, for example, the heart rate didn't go over like 168, 169, because it was like freezing and hailstone and all this. I don't love heart rate for that. I would love a live lactate monitor. That would be amazing that you didn't have to stop, but they don't really exist yet. And so Moxie is about as close I think I'll get to continuously see. And let's say, for example, today when I ran 315, if it was like 30 and then it was like 29, then 28, and then 27, well, I'd have backed off, because the final 305 part of today, I actually didn't mind if I had to work. Sometimes pace is important. And at the end of the day, you want to break 210, you got to be able to run 305. So that was important. But those earlier parts of today, it's about working, but not creating any debt yet. And so I would have paid more attention to what the Moxie monitor was saying. So if, like I said, if it started to decline, I probably would have backed off a little bit. And not, otherwise, what's the point in wearing it? That's about all I got for you. It was, I guess, 16 mile plus probably like 17 and a bit after warm up. It was 28.5K, I think, total, whatever that is. Good morning. Really good. Really strong. Felt really good. Could have ran the last K really fast if I wanted to. That's a good sign. Good sign of things to come. So I'll do a long run like that. I think the next one's in about 2 weeks' time. They're not every week, but I prefer when I am doing sort of marathony type long runs that I just make it count, that I work a bit, but in a sort of controlled way. And then now I take two easy days to let that settle, allow the body to recover. So yeah, I hope everybody's good. Well done with your training. I'm learning more and more lately, a lot more, you could probably say. So adjustments will be made, you know, the plans I put on joggingroom.com. I'm learning that this like zone two is very, very important. This like steady that I talk about. And for a lot of people, it's not going to be as fast as you think. You can't do a simple calculation that it's 1 minute slower than X, Y, or Z. It really kind of needs to be dialed in a bit better than that. But the suggestion for most people would be that you need to run slower. And you need to kind of like, I would probably be more inclined to do like, let's say, for example, for me, my steady is like a minute per mile slower than my marathon pace, right? So my marathon pace is, let's call it 5 minutes. So is that like 20% slower, something like that? You would probably want to assume that that's the upper side of your zone two, possibly. And then you would work, maybe you would work from 30% to 20%, you know, something like that. So it's kind of like a progression over a 1 hour run or an 80 minute run, but you're progressing it, you make sure that the first 30, 40 minutes is definitely inside like fat oxidation and all that sort of thing. And from what I'm learning and listening to these like amazing coaches, the coach in the Tour de France and stuff, and I'm just really learning that if you're new to running, I've been doing this 20 plus years. My fat oxidation is very, very good. Very, very good. But that's took 20 years. I'm learning that if you're new to running, zone two is not a speed. Zone two is where your body's burning fat well, right? For you, it might literally be a walk jog, which sucks. And it seems so like annoying, but it just is what it is. So yeah, it's really something that would be worth exploring, like some kind of testing. I think if only just to show yourself like, shit, I have to really back off to running that like zone two steady area. And this is all new to me. Like I'm listening to Teddy Pagacha's coach. His name's Inigo San Milan. You know, he works with mitochondria. He works in cancer research. He's a genius. And I'm just constantly learning. And I think that's so important. But my advice there would be slow things down. My advice would be not trying to squeeze in Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then long run Sunday. Probably, honestly, I'd nearly move to one session a week and a structured long run. And then you could do like speed at some point during the week, but you'll gain more. I think what people think is there's a lot of like jogging involved in running, and there's actually very little jogging. Jogging's really if you need like slow recovery, which I did yesterday morning. My body was super tired. And that's what's amazing about Moxie. Yesterday morning, I had to run, I'm not kidding you, at 120 heart rate and like 7:45 pace to keep my saturation at like 45. And then that evening, I was able to run at 6 minute pace and the saturation was, and that's just one real easy, slow run, getting the body saturated, getting it feeling better can make all the difference. Had I not wore the Moxie, I'd have probably ran at 140 heart rate in the morning, 610 pace, 620. And then I'd have been like, wow, why am I tired tonight? And then maybe I'd have even struggled this morning. It is crazy that, yeah, like, some days heart rate will just not add up to where the, you know, the metabolic like a cost is underneath the surface. Can't always rely on heart rate. But yesterday was a really slow, easy jog. But then if the body's okay, physically okay, psychologically okay, and you know, you're in a good place, well then you don't jog. You can run. And that's that zone two, fat oxidation stuff. But you really do need to know where that area is for you to then be able to go out and do it for 45, 60 minutes a week. This physiologist says twice a week, two runs like that a week, twice a week, 45 to 60 minutes will maintain your current level of like fat distribution and oxidation. But really it takes 3 or 4 to move it forward. Yeah, it's crazy. But I'm going to leave you that. Let me see how long it took me to do all that. I hope that didn't stop recording. I'll cry. 39 minutes. Well done. Good job, team. Thanks for listening.